O'clock on a Thursday, and time for Uncensored with Penny Faree.
Good morning, everyone. This is Penny Faree, and welcome to the first edition of Uncensored in 2025. And this is a show that's going to cut through the noise. We're going to ask the tough questions and get real about issues shaping the North Coast region. No spin, no censorship, just raw, honest conversations. So today we're going to dive into one of the most heated debates currently in South Africa, land distribution and the new Expropriation Act of 2024, which is now law and sets the legal framework for land expropriation in South Africa. And I'm just going to quickly touch on the key takeaways. It's very quick. So the government can expropriate land for housing, land reform and development, and compensation isn't guaranteed. It's based on fairness, market value and public interest. Some land, like abandoned or state property, may be taken without compensation. Property owners must get notice and a chance to object, and courts have the final say on disputes over expropriation and compensation. Now, supporters say it's a necessary step to fix historical injustices and provide land for housing, farming, and economic development. Critics argue it opens the door to instability, discourages investment, and could repeat the failure seen in Zimbabwe's land reform crisis. So is this fair or dangerous? Joining us in the studio this morning is Tabani Msimang. He's a Belita resident, family man, businessman, political activist, and part of the MK leadership in the region. So good morning and welcome to the show, Tabani.
Good morning, Penny. Yeah. Good morning, Dave. Always a pleasure to be on your show.
We're going to just dive right in at the moment. Now, my first question before we just unpack this is, how would you respond to those who argue that the calls for faster land redistribution is stoking racial tension in a way that could damage national unity?
Well, you know the position of MK on the issue of the act that's just been passed and signed by the president, that it is a watered-down instrument that is meant to address the issue of land. So what people are complaining about is watered down. It doesn't really address and doesn't go into the gist of the issues. You know? And in my view and in our view from MK, anyone who is opposed to land redistribution and anything that talks to redress in this country is blind and is someone that is actually not for us as South Africans. You've seen what's happening internationally and what Donald Trump and AfriForum has done for us, and the narrative that they've been selling around the world, and it tells you that we have a section in our communities that is completely against us, completely against South Africans, that are unpatriotic, that have no interest for the people of South Africa.
I know you've emphasized urgency, you know, in the past, but what do you think the government has struggled with to meet land distribution targets? The political will and the pressure has been there, yet they have failed in that department. What is your opinion on the failure to deliver what they, you know, promised from 30 years ago?
At the center of the government's failure, the government of the ANC, is the issue of a lack of ideological coherence. South Africa lacks what's called ideological coherence. We are very bent on capitalist type economy. We see ourselves as a capitalist economy, free economy. Yet you have a huge section of the country within the ANC, in particular your SACP, your COSATU, and you name it, that is more pulling to the left in terms of being socialist, which is not a bad thing. As a development country, you need a government intervention to make sure that we address and redress whatever that was destroyed by the past government, the apartheid government in this case, you know. So at the core of what we're dealing with is a government that is confused, is an economy that doesn't know which way to turn, whether left or right. We are, for example, as you know, we are members of BRICS, but at the same time, we are very close friends with the NATOs of this world. And you know that in the next couple of weeks or so, yeah, there's a G20 meeting that needs to take place in South Africa that the US has threatened to boycott because of the land expropriation issue. So South Africa is dealing with issues of a lack of ideological coherence. But beyond that, it's lack of political will from those who are in power. As you know, the ANC has been in power for 30 years, but not much has been done. Besides the land that is in the hands of the business people internationally that own land in South Africa, and the white people that own land in the majority in this country, but you have a government that also owns land that has not been redistributed. And you have, in KZN, for example, we have Ingonyama Trust. The land now that is in question, that the likes of the DA now they want, in particular, they are gunning for that land with all their professors from the UCT, all of a sudden they have an interest in the land that is in Ingonyama land. Because that particular land as well, it must be availed and must be the same as the land that's available in the few hands. And whoever has the most money must be able to buy that land, you know. So it's a mixture of many issues. Corruption is one of them, obviously. Yeah. As you know, we are dealing with a corrupt government. And that is that has been doing all kinds of deals with those who own land. Sometimes people are overpaid for the land in the land restitution deals that are done between farmers and the government. And what I'm talking about is not a political speech. It's what it's in the news out there. It's a public information that a corrupt government every now and then has been collaborating with the same people that shout hang him. In this case, it will be the land that is owned by white farmers that collaborate with some of the corrupt people in the ANC and overinflate prices in the process of doing this whole land restitution.
You know, I know land reform is about justice, but a lot of people are saying that the government's failure in is using this to distract the government in their failure, housing, jobs, and the economy. And I'm going to go back to the point you said about the land that was purchased, overinflated. I have a case study. You know, it was in much of the land in Kwadikoos is privately owned land. So the municipality only owns about 2.3% of the total land area within its boundaries. And there are very few properties that are under public ownership. So a large amount of the land is used for agriculture. The law allows expropriation for the public interest, and the question is what qualifies it, what will productive farms be at risk. But I read this was taken from the KDM's Integrated Development Plan. It's a public document, and they present it with a budget yearly. And I'll quote them. They said, if housing delivery continues at its current pace, then the backlog is set to remain over a period of 10 to 15 years, and increase dramatically if delivery is not significantly increased. The housing backlog remains a significant issue for the Kwadikoos municipality, which currently sits at around 70,000. So after 3 years, 30 years in power, the ANC has only managed to transfer 10% of land. So I think, you know, given the case history, South Africans don't have faith in the process. And if you take the farmland in Kwadikoos municipality, I started looking into that during COVID in 2021. And I just concentrated on a few farms and going with wind deed records. These farmlands were looked at for the purpose of human settlement projects. Now, in November 2011, KDM purchased Hyde Park Farm for 55 million. It was 182 hectares. The registration date was July 2012. Now, the farm was for human settlements and was leased back to the owner, who's still farming on it. There was another farm in 2013. Which KDM purchased. It was 226-hectare farm. They purchased it for 59 million. It had approximately 220 hectares of cane and citrus. No existing services on the farm. After the purchase, the farm was leased back on a 10-year lease, and that was also a human settlement project. No house has been built on that farm. And then you've got another one, 2016. KDM purchased a 312-hectare farm. Okay, for 21 million, leased back to another farm. So you're looking at the history and the data and the facts. How is this now going to change?
Well, what we did as MK, as you know, in May this last year, we voted the ANC out. People came out in their numbers and they voted the ANC out. Sadly, some of
18 out of 30 wards in Kwadukuza municipality got the MK vote.
And the NC only won one, the one that is now coming back to to MK
because 28.
There's a by-election that's coming very soon.
2nd of April.
Yes. But the point that I want to make is we voted the ANC out. The poor out there voted the ANC out. And sadly, some of our friends in the business and in the DA, for whatever good reasons, they decided actually this incompetent, this corrupt ANC is worthy of another shot in power. And we have what's called the GNU right now, as you know.
Yes.
And the tune has changed completely now from our friends, the DA, who at the time were singing the same tune as us. The ANC is corrupt. Yeah. The ANC needs to be voted out. They had deals with the likes of Action SA to make sure that we vote ANC out. And when the opportunity came to get that ANC out, you know what happened in KZN, the case now that's going on about vote rigging. The DA is not in support of that. And for what good reasons, we don't know. But to answer your question specifically, you need to look at those evaluations specifically. I am privy to that, to the information on those as well. If you look at those evaluations...
were undervalued. I mean, overinflated.
They were overinflated. Yeah. They were valued at... the one for 59 million rands, for example, that I sold at 50-something million rands, was valued at around about 21 million rands.
No, you know what? I took an independent evaluator who specializes in agricultural valuations. I took him to the farm, and he said, at best, that farm wouldn't have gotten more than 7 million rand purchase. It had a land claim. It had no services. It was far out, so it was very hard to get there. And they bought it. I mean, 59 million rand was exchanged, and yet no house has ever been built on that land.
Yes, it's pretty clear that if the purchase of the land had nothing to do with the people
out there.
And but I always want to, when dealing with these questions, to not only focus on the corruption of the ANC, because there's also a farmer involved that allowed this corruption to happen.
It's
a corruptor and a corruptee,
absolutely.
You know. So there are two parties to it.
Yeah.
But in the main, the focus on the ANC is that you would expect, one would have expected that the ones that are shouting redress, they're shouting all kinds of slogans about transformation, you name it, to be the one that are in the forefront of making sure that when they purchase land and use it, public resources in this case, they are used sparingly, but they are used as efficiently as possible, and they use a huge portion of that money to build those houses. There was never an intention to help the poor or to buy that
redress,
land. To actually make sure that there is redress on the issue of land, in particular on those ones. I'm sure you must have seen what currently happening with the changes and the corruption and the money that's being stolen.
Yes, we're going to get to that
in the municipality. Because now they've realized, just like the National Party pre-94, they've realized that they are losing power, and they'll be losing power soon. They are stealing like you won't believe it. And I'll digress a little bit. You have international ambassadors like Elon Musk in the U.S. now that are shouting slogans against us, negative narratives with the AfriForum. But those are the very same people that pre-94, when they realized that South Africa was now going into democracy, they left the country. Many of them are multimillionaires and billionaires through money that was siphoned through the National Party and the government and the banks themselves involved in those transactions, you know. So we've got to be very careful as leaders and as social activists and the media in this case to go into the bottom of these matters when dealing with them, because we are dealing with very sophisticated crooks across the board.
Yeah.
Can I possibly just ask a question? I think the fear is that the MKEFF socialist agenda, let's call it this, is going to be more damaging to the South African economy than the current corrupt ANC-GNU economy. And that's the agenda, that's the narrative that is currently in circulation, and I think it's widely accepted. you have a different view, and I wanted to ask you, why would it be different? Because the MK is a formation under Jacob Zuma where most of the state capture problems seemed to start. And I might be completely wrong in this, but this is my perception.
It's definitely your perception, and I don't want to rubbish it.
No, you're welcome to. That's the idea for this forum.
Yeah, the issue for me, Dave, and those kinds of questions, in most cases, they are one-sided questions. The South Africa, the ANC itself, they inherited a corrupt and but a bankrupt government from the National Party in 1994. Mm. We, as the ANC at the time, I was a member of the ANC. The government of Mandela and his cabinet had to go to the international community to get money to get the government going, and part of that money was to fund what was meant to destroy black people in the country in terms of the programs of the apartheid government. But in the whole, we inherited a government that was corrupt, that was bankrupt. Fast forward to your question.
Okay.
Now Zuma takes over the country that was state captured in the main by the so-called monopoly capital, which are known in the country that are dominant. Mm-hmm. Look at the Guptas, for example. It is said that the part of the capture that you are talking about didn't amount, was just under 5% of the economy, in inverted commas, that the Guptas had captured. 95% of that still remained in the white hands. Yet, as a country, we're not talking about the 95%. Part of 95%, David, we're talking about is the issue of land that is in the majority owned by white people. Yet Zuma...
Is that a fact? It is a fact.
Yeah. Yet Zuma, for all his sins, for all his mistakes, if there were any mistakes that he made as a leader, we all make mistakes as leaders. Yet Zuma is crucified for attempting to change, and through the Guptas in this case, for example, they took 5%, and the 95% that is still captured by the monopoly capital in this country. Yet we're not talking about those things.
Because possibly we don't know the details, but what we do know is that the institution after institution has collapsed. You look at education, you look at healthcare, you look at security. There's so much evidence that the government that came to power in 94 inherited these systems that were working. The SABC was working, Danel was working, ISCO was working, the post office was working. They were all working. They were functional. And one would imagine that you could build from that.
We need to give credit to the government of Nelson Mandela that took over in 1994. There is nothing that you claim to be working when it's bankrupt. They were bankrupt. In the face of it, they were working, because remember as well, you are talking about institutions that were meant to serve minority in the country at the time.
Okay.
They were working because they were meant for that, you know, to serve the minority. Mandela comes in, he gets the money to get the economy going, but in the main, then that economy now serves millions of South Africans instead of serving the minority. Yeah. Obviously, as you know, in Balito, right now we have infrastructure issues with electricity. When everyone is in Balito, there's no power, there's no this. It's the issue of infrastructure, because Balito was never intended for Shaka's hate. It was never intended for the majority of people that are here in Balito right now. Yet you have a government that is corrupt, that lacks any kind of insight into development and infrastructure.
But how is it going to be different going forward? Because I believe there is a plan for MK to take Guadaguza, pretty well established in terms of the logistics. At Guadaguza being one of the jewels in the crown of KZN, if you capture Guadaguza, you have the opportunity then to almost benchmark going forward the rollout of an MK alternative. And I think what everyone listening to this wants to know is, how will it be different?
Well, if I'm glad that you, beyond these radio discussions, you know a little bit more about some of the things that people like myself, as a leader and as a businessman, a politician, do in our communities. So MK is a government in waiting at national level and at provincial level and at regional level. we want to take the municipality, as you said, as you rightly said. What if you look at the caliber of people that the MK party has lined up at national level, in the national high command, and the people deployed in the government, and the people that have now been appointed in the regions and in the provinces, listen, the MK has put together a highly qualified, highly efficient, but highly sensitive kind of leadership that understands that we are where we are, that some of us in the ANC, for example, we sang too many narratives without actually understanding that at the end of everything that we are doing, this is about the people, it's not about individuals. Mm. MK is going to change things. But
that's the question, how? And why will it be different? Because you have, in the leadership of MK, then there have been quite a few revolving positions and changes, and one understands that it's a new party, it will happen. But there are also a number of individuals with extremely questionable credentials that have been elevated to positions of authority and power within MK. Historically, the situation is a result of a kind of ineptocracy at best, kleptocracy at worst. And how will it be different going forward with the same individuals? Maybe I'm not explaining myself particularly well. I think everyone is longing for a better future. Everyone. I don't think there's a soul in this country that isn't looking for a better, brighter, happier, securer future.
Sure.
But that's what we want.
It's a very good question, Dave. I always want to balance these kinds of questions with understanding the history of this country. Dave, you know the history of my family and how my elder brother and others were murdered in my presence a couple of years ago during apartheid. They were murdered by the South African Defense Force at the time, and in particular the people that were behind that were African-speaking people and in the National Defense Force at the time. Post that, people like myself have moved on. We don't throw such things in the faces of white people. Every Africaner that I meet, that I play golf, that, hey, by the way, you killed my brother. You see, in South Africa, we have a tendency post-apartheid to pose as saints. A lot of people that do these things are people that have not moved on from apartheid, but they're just longing for this apartheid to come back, but then using people like Zuma, for example, President Zuma, as a scapegoat to say, we can't have MK because Zuma did that. In the government of national unity, we have people in the Conservative Party that are now ministers that supported apartheid.
But let's not go back to the past. Let's go forward to the future. I want to know how, and let's just devil's advocate say, MK sweeps the board of the next election and becomes the ruling party and forms a government.
And obviously uses, the whole fear is using government power for political gain or corruption, because that is what's happened.
Well,
it's benefited the elite, a minority elite have benefited from
this. Well, sure, but I just want to know, going forward,
sure,
is there a future for example, white people in South Africa?
Oh, that's a heavy question,
listen,
Dave.
Well, the future as it is in South Africa only belongs to white people in this country. The white people in the country in South Africa are the only ones, in inverted commas, that are enjoying the fruits of democracy.
But I'm talking about going forward.
Yes, that's the future. That's what this is, where we are. That's where we're going forward. As things stand, white people are enjoying all the fruits of our democracy. Black people here, just across the board here, at Shaka's Head. What is the future of the people in Shaka's Head, Dave?
Yeah.
Future? Because we're asking about the future of white people that are doing well in South Africa. What is the future of black people across the board, across the road here, just across here, Shaka's Head, that are languishing
but
in poverty?
That's what I'm trying to get to. What is your vision of the future?
The reason I'm taking you on that question, Dave, is that generally, when we are in front of the media, we have to ask questions. One of the questions that you always have to field is, what is the future of the white people in the country? So always we have to affirm white people, and you have to say, white people, guys, we are here for you. If you look at the constitution of MK and even of the ANC and everyone, no one has threatened the future of anyone, especially white people.
Why is it divisive though? Why does it have to be divisive? I mean,
exactly.
Right now,
it's the media that is divisive.
Yeah, it's creating a divisive narrative in our country, and it's destabilizing a lot of people, because obviously investors are worrying that this could scale business, weaken property markets, hurt job creation.
ANC has been very mild about it, Penny. Sorry to interject. The ANC has been very mild, and they've adopted neoliberal policies for the past 30 years. Yes, the country is languishing in poverty, unemployment. These investors we're talking about in a neoliberal economy, they've not come on board. Where are they? Mm-hmm. The ANC is now in the government, the DA. President Cyril Ramaphosa has been in government for 7 years. And the stuff that Dave is talking about, that certain parastatals in the government were destroyed by the Zuma and his cronies and you name. President Ramaphosa has been in government for 7 years. He was in government with President Zuma before that. What has Cyril done in the 7 perfect years to resolve the issues that Dave was talking about in terms of the parastatals, for example? If anything, the country under Cyril, 7 years, has gone back.
Absolutely.
Has gone backwards.
I agree with that.
Yet the media won't ask these difficult questions to Cyril. Say, Cyril, by the way, in the times when you were the deputy president of President Zuma, things were working. The rand was 14 rand. It's now 20 rand, some change against the USD. Petrol price, you name it. The food basket, you name it. Everything has gone south.
But I'm saying this is like the chickens have come home to roost. This is this grand scale, lack of infrastructure maintenance, using capital budgets for what they tended to. That at local government has been playing out for a long time. And now we are seeing it because, I'm just bringing it back to Kwadi Kuza, because we've had like a 40% growth that wasn't planned for, or if it was, they didn't cater for it. So we're seeing a collapsed infrastructure because it's not coping. And the issues there are, to do with the leadership who are currently in charge of our local government. We need to be bringing it down to that level now, because I feel that our region is facing a massive crisis at the moment. And the ANC council, which won only 29, but they didn't win a majority at the last local elections, which is coming up next year. They won 29 seats out of 59, and they had to obviously get a minority party to get the 30 seats so it can give them a majority. Now, we are seeing people still not talking about why have they had no vote of confidence. You're seeing this all play out, and yet in the same breath, you're looking at all the corruption that's quickly unfolding right now. Why is everyone just not, saying that leadership now needs to stand down? Because
I think that leadership is going to stand down, and my question still remains, and I wish we had more time to unpack it.
Yeah.
I am curious about the future. I would like to know. I would like Thabani Msimang to explain that under an MK government, the future is going to be better for all South Africans. And I think maybe this is a good point to pause and get you back next week to answer that one.
Yeah.
Because it's a vital question. You see, I really have no problem with the notion of an MK government, if an MK government could guarantee that South Africa going forward was going to be a haven of investment, of opportunity, of growth, of jobs, of security. I think that would be a magnificent vision. I would love you to unpack for us your vision of the future, because if that's something that we can get behind, well, then the fear disappears.
2 minutes.
You've got 2 minutes and then we wrap it.
Meritocracy is a buzzword within MK. If you look at the caliber of people that have been deployed in different leadership positions, they are very highly educated people, and in their own right, in their own fields. And please study the type of people that MK has put in positions versus what the DA and the ANC put in different positions. Please study that,
yeah.
Dave.
Give us the list. Yes. We'd love to go through it.
You have that. Chief, I'll give you the list. The Chief Justice, our Deputy President Zondo, and many others, including myself, by the way, and in terms of the credibility that we bring on the table. But South Africa will definitely be a better place under MK, because one thing about MK is that we We don't pose and for interviews and lie to people out there that it's business as usual and then that things are rosy. Dave, I would rather deal with someone that tells me the truth that my breath smells than someone that's, that kisses me and on the and turns and back and tell everyone that my breath smells. This country is on a wrong path with the DA on power and the ANC in power because they are glossing over the issues and not addressing issues. We need to address the issue of land. We need to address the issue of economy, of employment, the issue of skills. And for us to do that, illiterates, for example, like the leaders in the DA, for example, and the ANC, by the way, are not going to solve those problems. Dave, we must go back to the time when this country valued education. Under the ANC, pass rate for matriculant is 34% or 30% or something.
And then lauded.
And, you know, guys, it you can't have those kinds of things. Imagine a minister of education under one of the leaders of the ANC, of Umkhonto weSizwe that we've currently put together at the moment. You know. So the future will definitely be bright. But the future, Dave, won't be a divisive future. We've got to be honest about certain things in the country that we need social redress. And all of us, black, white, Indian coloreds, red and brown and whatever color that is that is out there, it is our problem. It's not the problem that MK will solve on its own. Remember, a few years ago, I engaged with farmers in the area, and they were all white, you know, and they are my friends. Some of them are my friends as we speak. But at the time, we were talking about, guys, you own land in the area. There's Shaka's Head here. And those farmers at the time, Dave, were saying, hey, Tobani, we'll contribute some portion of our land to fix Shaka's Head. And obviously, I'm not in power to effect anything in that. But you have farmers in Palito that were willing at the time to say, hey, we'll contribute some land to fix. This is what MK will do. Social justice and engagement with the people. Because you don't... Sometimes people assume that when you talk of... transformation and you talk of land redistribution, that there's gonna be land grabs. We're talking about people that we know personally, that we speak to them. There's a lot of engagement that needs to happen, but it can't be done on lies. We can't lie to each other and say everything is rosy and you can have as much land as you want against the people that Shaka said that have nothing. There is a problem in the country, and it's for us to fix it.
Yeah.
Good point to pause. I think, Penny, we'll pick it up again in a week's time.
You know, I wanted to, we do have an update on the KDF fraud case that's currently playing out. So we could possibly just go through it now or take it after the break.
Let's take a breather and we'll come back. Extended edition of the first Uncensored with Penny Fourie, coming back just after 9 minutes past 10 o'clock with some very important news from the municipality.
Yeah. I'm just going to do the update because this has been in the media and everyone's talking about the KDM fraud that was uncovered on the 31st of January. So APSA, the fraud division, picked up suspicious transactions within KDM's primary account on the 31st of January, and they contacted the municipality to validate these transactions. So according to a preliminary APSA report, which you have seen, the funds of 35.7 million were paid out in two batches from the municipality's primary account into 15 different bank accounts. Subsequently, all the monies were transferred into these accounts. APSA have managed to trace them, and they have frozen those bank accounts. Meanwhile, in the special council meeting, which we also had the report on, KDM report presented at a special council meeting stated that no intrusion had been detected in the network of the municipality. It's also said that before the transfer actually happened, all the finance officials were signed off at the same time from the internal system, which is used by the KDM municipality, and APSA advised KDM to initiate their own internal investigation, which they said they will provide support for, and a well-placed source within KDM told me four KDM employees are currently being investigated. APSA does have the name of the 15 recipients whose bank accounts were used to deposit the money, and they've managed to chase the money back to the banks, and subsequently the funds are frozen, so that's a good thing. And I have been told that APSA actually approached the High Court requesting that the monies that they're going to recover be paid back to Kochter and not into KDM's bank account. So we're going to do a full report on the story as soon as we learn more. But that is the current update.
And there we leave it for today. Yeah. The Uncensored with Penny Faree will repeat next week, same time. And it'll be up as a podcast shortly if you missed it or you've just joined us and are wondering what it was all about. Very interesting conversation with Tavani Msimang of the MK. Penny Faree will be back with another edition of Uncensored next Thursday. And Radio Life and Style's normal programming resumes now.